Perfect.
Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live.
Live.
On the Fight Mixer Show.
Mike, check. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fight Mixer, starring Gabe and his hype man, David. How you doing, Gabe?
What's going on, Dave?
Same old.
Another day in paradise.
Another day in paradise, baby.
How's the East Coast?
Kind of sucks right now. You know, there's a lot of rain, thunderstorms. You know, we have politics going on, which, you know, makes everybody miserable. So, hanging in there. I didn't die yet. I mean, you know, I haven't caught the plague, so... Yeah. But it's pretty good.
I didn't know anything was going on politic-wise.
Yeah, I had no idea either. Gabe, what's going on with politics?
That's not what you hear 24 hours a day.
It's pretty here in California. That's all I know.
So tonight we have Colin Oyama, legendary coach. Coach guys like Gabe's favorite, Tito Ortiz, Rampage Jackson, Vera, who had a huge win. Bear, who just had a huge win over Sugar Shane O'Malley, Cookie Monster, Carla, fucking awesome fighter. And then we also have Ken Shamrock. And Gabe, you actually ran into both during your journeys through mixed martial arts. Is that correct?
I have. I mean, I've known Colin. I know Colin far better than I know Ken. I've met Ken at a couple of events. But Colin, he's been in the corner. He's not cornering me personally, but we've shared corners together. And I call him one of those guys I respect immensely. He's been in the game for a long time.
Well, so you guys, like, you had a fighter or something, and, like, you guys actually cornered the same fighter, or was it, like, a guy that trained at your gym and, like, his gym? How does that work out?
I was the one that Colin and I talk about the most is I was fighting, and Colin was cornering one of his guys. And I don't know if you guys know who Al Stanky is. He's a legendary boxing coach that worked with like Anderson and Tito, or Vitor and a bunch of guys. And Al happened to be in the corner with us. And to this day, which is, I think that was probably like 2009, we still talk about our time with the legendary Al Stanky.
Awesome. And like, how does it feel that like he actually cornered a guy that you were fighting? Like, is there some type of animosity, or is there any type of like, oh, you cornered one of my enemies? Nope.
No. So we shared the corner. I was fighting. Colin's fighter was fighting. We were in the same corner.
Oh, yeah.
I've cornered against Colin's guys. And I mean, he always has well-prepared fighters. And I'm always like, whenever I have one of my fighters that's going to fight an Oyama guy, I'm like, we have to be 100% prepared because Colin doesn't bring – freaking schlep rocks.
And he's been like a spoiled, he's spoiled the UFC party like numerous times with like people that they're actually hyping up and building up, like Rampage versus Chuck Liddell, Pride Grand Prix 2003. He spoiled the party of Rosnam Yunus. They were hyping up Rosnam Yunus to the moon in 2014, and then Cookie Monster completely dimmed her out. And then now with Vera beating Sugar Shane O'Malley. I mean, Colin Oyama has played the spoiler to the UFC's party on multiple different occasions. Like, Team Oyama does not fuck around at all, Gabe.
Listen, they're the consummate professionals. They come in always prepared. My guys are 2-0 versus against Colin. But besides that, like, his guys come in ready to go. And there's a reason why they're the spoilers. And I don't think, even with like the verified, I thought that was a fight that very well could have gone the other way. Now people were saying it's a spoiler, but I'm like, I don't think you guys are, Colin has his guys prepared and he watches video and he knows. he gets prepared, you know?
Yeah, but they UFC backed this guy and they hyped this guy to the moon, Sugar Shane O'Malley. Like, if you see the hype up, there was a blip it about Vera. And Vera's, you know, a very tough fighter. He's no fucking joke whatsoever. But there was a blip about him, and then you have fucking Sugar Shane O'Malley sitting on, like, the King's throne with that ridiculous robe on, and they're hyping him to the moon. And even after the fight, did you see what, like, Sugar Shane O'Malley's been saying about Vera? Like, it's fucking nuts. Like, I don't think the kid has learned his lesson yet. I have no idea.
Hype is hype. Hype is hype. Look, fights play out the way they do, and there's going to be favorites, and promotions are trying to build people. But I think there's nothing better than a fighter coming in that's being underestimated and making a finish. And, you know, that was a perfect example of that happening.
And there's the man himself, legendary MMA coach, Colin Oyama. What's going on, Colin?
I don't, man. Sorry, I have a problem with the electronics of getting on here, but
it's okay, man. And coach, congratulations on a big win. Vera capturing a big win over Sugar Shane O'Malley. How's everybody doing? How's Vera doing? What's been going on with camp, Team Oyama?
I think everyone's doing well. I think we just stay busy. So once that fight's over, you're happy for about an hour or two, and then you got to move on to the next one. So we're back here in Las Vegas again.
On to the next.
Got another one. Yeah.
And we were just talking about, and you have been like one of my favorite coaches of all time, especially growing up. Like, we talked about how Team Oyama has always been the spoiler to the UFC's party. Like, Rampage fighting Chuck Liddell, Pride Grand Prix 2003. Cookie Monster beating Thug Rose Namajunas when he hyped up Thug Rose Namajunas to the moon. And now Vera beating Sugar Shane O'Malley. Like, all the guys that the UFC are backing, Team Oyama has an answer for them. Like, what's the secret sauce, coach? Like, how do you do it? Like, how do you come with that pressure, prepare your guys to capture those big wins?
I think you just got to let your athletes know that, you know, you're fighting another person. I think sometimes the media or whatever, they build people up to do something a lot greater than they are. But, in the end, that guy's going to take a crap the same way you do, right? So just got to believe in yourself and believe in the people around you. I see upsets happen all the time. So I didn't even look at it as an upset. I felt that we would be able to, so, and I felt that Carla was going to be able to win that fight. So I think it's just comes down to instilling some confidence in your people that, hey, man, you know, some people think it's an upset. I look at it like, hey, I expect you to beat him. So. Same with Quentin and Chuck. I definitely thought we'd win that fight. So just got to get your athletes to believe in themselves, you know?
Yes, sir. And you and Gabe have ran to each other a bunch of times. Like, what's the history between you guys?
Oh, Gabe? I remember this guy. I mean, when I was younger, we were always looking to put on fights and stuff, and he was up and coming. So I think he fought a few times locally, and then as his career progressed, definitely watched him fight a little bit and stuff. And then when he retired, we ran into each other at the backstage at a fight. Funny thing is, I don't remember anything about that fight other than I was with Gabe and we were back there with Al Stanky. And you know, if you ever met Al, he's an interesting guy and he has some interesting quotes, but he definitely left an impression on both of us because we're still laughing about it. So I can't even remember the fight or who was fighting or what, but I remember I was back there with two people. Gabe was one of them, and Al Stanky was the other one. And that guy had some great stories, and I just started laughing, man. It was funny.
Yeah. You're actually incorrect. It was at an event. I was fighting, and you were coaching. No. I was fighting that night. I fought Valderbraga that night. We were in the same corner, and Al Stanky was telling us about the young kid, Vitor Belfort, who was going to do stuff. You and I both kept looking at each other like,
What's so weird?
Yeah, no, it was, all I know is they ripped everybody off. That's all I remember. I remember that I got my check. I remember I got my check. I was completely overwhelmed. I'm still to this day in awe, shock and awe with that guy.
So how did you get started with coaching? And Colin, how'd you get started with like coaching? And obviously, you know, you had a great career and you coached some of the who's who of the game. Like, how'd you get started with coaching?
When I got out of college, I needed to do something other than football because I couldn't, too small for the NFL. So I didn't know what else to do. So I was looking for something else to do. And then I ended up going to law school. So I needed something else to do for sure because school kind of sucks. So somehow, man, I rolled into a Muay Thai gym by mistake. I was trying to get to North Hollywood, but I ended up in Van Nuys and ended up staying there. Gave me something to do through school. When I finished school, I needed a part-time job. So I ended up, yeah.
Were you at the MTA?
No, I was at Van Nuys Kickboxing Gym. Were you the Muay Thai?
Okay. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. That's so, dated, yeah, my friend.
Then I just needed a part-time job. So I ended up working at LA Boxing, going to school, and got hired. They asked me to train this kid. So I'm like, all right, you know, I don't know. Ended up training this kid. And my first guy was Rob McCullough. So that's kind of how that started. Never planned on going that long. Beast. I thought I was going to be an attorney and make a lot of money, but. Oh well. Next thing you know, that led to one person, led to another, and pretty soon you're kind of like pretty far into it, so you just kind of keep going, I guess, you know.
Right. And you also were coach of Gabe's favorite fighter, Tito Ortiz. Is that correct?
Yeah, I met him. I mean, he was an Orange County guy, so at the time, MMA was pretty big in Orange County. It's probably not as big now as it was before, but I think a lot of the local kids were on that MMA/UFC thing down in Orange County. Just, I guess, because of a lot of the names that were in the UFC were from there. But that was an interesting experience. Looks like Tito's still doing okay. So good.
Could you ever imagine
about that? You know,
what's that?
I was going to ask you about that, Coach. You know that he's running for public office, right?
Yeah, I just heard about that the other day. We talked for a brief time.
Have you had an opportunity to listen to any of his exceptional interviews?
I can't say that I have. So I don't know either way. I don't really follow people's politics too much, but I guess, you know, everybody's got their
convictions. It's not about the politics, my friend.
Hey, well, as long as he's not running against Al Stanky, it's okay.
It's about his ability to talk, and my man is exceptional at the talk.
All right, Colin.
Sorry.
So we're going on to the topics. All right, so Colin, like you were a coach, like especially coaching those guys, the Team Punishment guys, while the UFC was first bought out by Zuffa and. You know, from the dark days to where it didn't get any publicity whatsoever to where it is now, where, you know, as a publicly traded company, did you ever imagine like the sport would get to where it is today?
It's kind of funny you ask that because I remember getting picked up at the Trump Taj Mahal. That was the first one that was owned by Zuffa. And then riding in the car with, you know, the Fertittas to the arena. And, you know, I think they sold 3,500 seats. And that was a big deal for the, you know, Trump Taj Mahal is a sellout. It was just 3,500 seats for the UFC. It was a complete sellout. And I remember meeting the Fertittas again, maybe 4 or 5 years later at another UFC event. We brought that up. I remember asking him, man, you know, remember that first ride and where it is now? And he started laughing. And he's like, yeah, it's been crazy. And, you know, I mean, those guys, they got money for a reason. They're not stupid. And, you know, I think the UFC really lucked out to have, you know, successful business people take over the reins of the show and move it in the right direction. So I can't say I imagine it being this big, but I'm glad it is. And it's pretty cool to see the evolution of the sport. And It sucks for guys like Gabe and some of those other guys. They kind of paved the way for these younger guys, you know. But I'm sure he can tell you the same thing about how the sports changed from when he started, and you know, fighting in little places and running from CSAC because it was still illegal.
Yeah.
And claiming it was a movie and all that other stupid stuff we did.
I did that.
Casinos. Yeah, I know you did, but I was probably putting them on. But
yeah,
seeing where it is now, it's kind of cool, you know. And I guess that's any sport, man. I mean, you know, you look at basketball, you got guys like, you know, Julius Erving and Michael Jordan, and now you got LeBron James. So sports grow as things change. And with the UFC, I'm glad to see it going in the direction that it's going. I think it was fun back in the old days, but now at least people can actually, you know, make a living doing something that's fairly difficult. You know, Gabe can tell you too, fighting for $100, man, that gets old quick. And the chance that these guys get to be on TV and get legitimate sponsors and be treated like a real professional athlete versus, you know, like a gimmick. I think it's good. Definitely good for the sport.
Awesome. Gabe, did you have a question?
What's that?
No, I'm in 100%. There's a lot. Unfortunately, there's a lag with mine. I apologize. I agree 100% with what Colin said. Now, you know, I still feel that there's a disparity in the pay to the fighters. And for as much as it's grown, you would expect that there would be, you know, a more of a share given to the people that are putting it on the line, that are, you know, that are spending time away from their family, that are potentially going to be injured. This is not a sport for the weak. Like, especially at the level that Collins guys are aspiring to get to get to that level, you have to put your body through hell. And people don't understand how much you have to do to even prepare for a fight. You know, like, if you're making $40,000 to $50,000 on a single fight, you're bringing in the best coaches, you're bringing in a nutritionist, you're trying to do the very best thing you can. And if you want the athletes to perform at the level that they can perform at, the pay needs to go up. But as Colin said, this is way different than, you know, pretending that, oh, you know, it's a pro wrestling show and hoping that CSAC doesn't take you to jail.
Yeah. So, Colin, like, what do you, as a coach who's trained the who's who and trained some of the top tier talent, like, what do you look for in a fighter? Like, what can you identify as that guy is going to be something? Like, what's your key factors that you look for in a fighter?
I think it's a combination of things. I know a lot of people look for that the athletic ability. And don't get me wrong, you need to have an athlete. You know, he has to have some semblance of an athletic ability. I mean, can't be a total schmuck. But at the same time, for me, it's that work ethic, man, that ability to grind things out. You know, people that don't got to be, like, motivated 24-7, that actually want to meet you halfway. I ran into a lot of talented guys, but as soon as you got to work for something, they get over it quick, you know. And I've seen a lot of less talented guys that have willed their way into better positions just because, you know, they're willing to put the time in and they were willing to grind it out. And if I had a choice between the two, I would probably take the worker. But it does help when the guys has the athletic ability and the work ethic to match. And, you know, that's definitely something we look for. But we've taken lesser guys just because, you know what, the guy's been willing to work hard. So I figured, like, you know what, if he's willing to try that hard, well, shit, you know, let's just see what can happen. And, you know, we've been surprised with some of the results. Some of these guys have willed their way into better positions just because they stuck it out and they were willing to sacrifice a little bit longer. And, you know, we had a guy like Alex Perez. He didn't get into the UFC after he had like 20 wins before he finally got in. You know, and you get 20 wins, and I think it's like 20-2 or something. You're still not in there. You start to wonder, am I ever going to get there? You know.
Yeah.
But for a guy like him to, you know, have to go the hard way, it's been great. So definitely look for talent, but at the same time, I've learned along the way, like, if the guy has no work ethic, it doesn't matter how talented he is, he's not going to make it.
Absolutely. And,
you got to have a guy that's willing to grind it out. Even with lesser talent, if the guy has that work ethic, you'd be surprised what people can accomplish just by trying hard. That's the one thing I look for, is just is this guy going to do it when it matters? And I've been pretty fortunate to run into some tough kids, hardworking kids too.
And with Timo Oyama, they always come and they always deliver the goods. So before we let you go, is there any fights that we can look forward to? Any times we can see any, like any point in time where we can see your fighters again? Like what do you got to say for us as fans?
We've got fights. I can't remember them all. We got back-to-back-to-back weeks here. Christian Aguilera's fighting this weekend. He's one of those grinders. The day he got into the UFC was one of the happiest days for me because, you know, just watching this guy's career and ups and downs and how hard he tries. When his agent was able to finally call him and tell him
he's a tough kid.
That was a great day, man, you know. And after that, we got Ricky Simon.
Yeah, man. He's a tough kid, man.
Yeah, he's a tough kid, man. He's a hardworking guy, and he's kind of a late bloomer. He's coming into his own right now.
I respect.
So I'm really excited.
I respect those fighter types, and like you were saying, give me a fighter over an athlete any day of the week. Give me a fighter every day.
Yeah, Christian. I think people like him because he's the real deal, man. He's not like a lot of hype, or he doesn't play for the camera. He is who he is, man. I mean, when you meet him, he's exactly the way he is when he fights. He's not somebody that's going to talk behind your back or something. He'll just tell it to your face, just straight up. And he's a straight up guy. And I'm glad he's in the big show, man. And you know, he's an underdog this weekend, but I think he's going to do great. Really great.
Awesome, Colin. And Colin, I thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing some knowledge, dropping some knowledge. And we hope to have look forward to all your fighters fighting, and we'll be cheering you guys on. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Coach. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Awesome. Colin Oyama, legendary coach. And you know better than anybody. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, solid dude.
And now we're being joined by the legend himself, Ken Shamrock. Ken, how you doing?
Good, man. Hey, appreciate you guys having me.
I appreciate you coming on, and Gabe here as well. And, you know, I can't say enough. I'm blushing while talking about it. But you're one of my childhood heroes. And watching you in UFC fighting, like, Chemo and, you know, fighting in Pride. That's why you fight, like, Alexander Otsuka, WWE. Watch you wrestle against, like, Owen Hart. And, you know, I grew up watching you. And it's an honor to have you on. So that starts off with my first question. And I know you're cramped for time. But what was your favorite pro wrestling match? And what was your favorite MMA fight? Because I can name up 20 million of them.
Yeah, that's a tough one because I had a lot of great opportunities when I first came in, whether it was MMA or whether it was pro wrestling. I very fortunately got to jump into MMA, and ever since I stepped in over in Japan, I think my first match was number 4 on the card, and then my second was a semi-main event. And then, of course, we moved into Fujiwara Gumi, and then, of course, Pancrase, and I was always fighting on the main card. So every fight I had was an up-and-coming guy, whether from Japan or from some other country. And so I was constantly challenged in the ring every fight because I was the guy to beat, and I was the face of many organizations. So everybody wanted to fight me. So anybody that came in that had any skill sets or that was good, I fought. So I had the opportunity to have a lot of really great fights. And same with pro wrestling. When I started WWF, you know, I started out and I was on all the main cards, all the pay-per-views, and I got to wrestle all the top guys. And so it was some tremendous, really tremendous opportunities for me. But I would have to say probably only because we got to do a program together, but it would have to be The Rock. Just because we tend to kind of like sharpen each other up pretty well, and we both moved up pretty fast. So I really enjoyed matches with him. But like I said, all of the guys that I got to wrestle, they were all really good, and I learned from all of them. I would say probably in MMA it would have to be probably capturing the first actual belt that they gave when it came to fighting in the UFC. And it was the first belt that was handed out. It was no weight classes. It was called the super fight. And I was able to go in there and win that fight and be the very first. So I also did it over in Japan where I won a 2-day tournament to actually capture the first belt handed out there. So a lot of great memories, man. So I could go on and on, but you know, it was, I was very fortunate and very honored to be able to be in those positions and be able to take advantage of them. And I had great memories because of it.
And you helped so much for all these different promotions. Like, you helped build the UFC, and then you go over to the WWE, which they were on a low run when you came into that company, and you helped them with the second boom of pro wrestling and helped them beat WCW. And you were part of that era, and your wars with like Owen Hart and The Rock. And now you're actually making a transition to bare knuckle fighting. Can you tell us a little bit about Valor bare knuckle? And do you think it can capture the imagination like you helped with UFC and you helped with WWE?
Yeah, it seemed like everywhere I went, I was able to help the organizations build up to the next level. And I was very happy to do that. But I would say definitely during the WWE time or F time, whatever you want to call it at the time. They were having wars with WCW. They lost all their top talent, Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Hunter Hearst, I guess, went over there for a while too. So a lot of our top stars they lost. So they couldn't win in the superstar area. So Vince needed to change directions. You know, he needed to figure something out and try to figure out how he could compete with them without trying to go star for star. And so I think he came up with this idea when he brought me in. He felt like he could take that craze, the MMA craze, no holds barred craze that was happening in the world, and bring it into pro wrestling and create this what we call now the Attitude Era. And I was the one that really kind of ignited that, even though you had Stone Cold and Bret Hart and a lot of other guys there too that were Shawn Michaels, you know, and list could go on and on, that were capitalizing on this Attitude Era. But I think that by bringing me in and coming from that world of the no holds barred, the legitimacy of it, it really helped solidify the Attitude Era. And I think I was the special sauce in that recipe to make everything go. And it was an awesome time. I enjoyed it.
And do you think you'll be able to bring that, Matt? Can you tell us a little bit about Valor? Because you've been involved with Valor and Bare Knuckle. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what the project is? And do you think you can elevate that and elevate Bare Knuckle just like you elevated both WWE and UFC?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you talk about the Bare Knuckle craze, you know, when I was talking about pro wrestling, that was kind of, pro wrestling was on its way up. So I went there. But you talk about the Valor Bare Knuckle right now. I got into Bare Knuckle and the idea of it because of what I was seeing on social media, where these backyard fights were happening and these different organizations in England, and they were having these fights and they were getting over a million views on social media. Right. And these weren't even like control fights. They were just fights that were happening in backyards and different areas, and people were watching it. And I thought to myself, man, it's time, right, to bring back that thing that I fell in love with long, long, long ago, which was the bare knuckle aspect, the purity of it, the rawness. So I felt like, okay, I want to jump in and I'm going to do this. And I want to try to bring it back more in a sense of boxing, but with no gloves, like the same kind of boxing rules. So it's not dirty and ugly looking where you're holding people and you're punching them and dirty boxing. And I want to keep it crisp, clean, something that people can actually see and know what it is, but take the gloves off, because I think that's what makes a real fight. And the punches are real. And I think we're far enough along that we all understand that the idea of people saying bare knuckle is dangerous is a joke. I think the reality of bare knuckle and people thinking about it way, way back in the day, yeah, because there was no really any science or medical studies behind it. But now we have all that. And we find out now, like, well, wait a minute now. You know, it's a lot different because the skull's a lot thicker than the hand. So if you hit somebody in the head and you don't hit the soft tissue area, you break your hand. And so your career is a lot shorter. So for me, it was really about education part of it, but the excitement and the adrenaline part of bare knuckle. And I think that's what people are falling in love with. That's what they fell in love when the first no holds barred came out. It was the idea of bare knuckle. It had nothing to do with submission, so nobody even knew what it was. But it was the bare knuckle that drew people into the sport.
Gotcha. And do you think it's going to evolve to the point where, you know, it's going to be bare knuckle also on the ground? It's going to be the complete MMA experience, where not just the bare knuckle boxing and the stand-up aspect, but, you know, MMA fans are going to evolve where they can see bare knuckle on the ground as well as standing up? Do you think it's going to evolve to that point?
Well, again, like I said, I think that that's the idea, is get back to the real part of this, right? And when I first started, that to me was pure purity, because you didn't have big gloves in the way of submissions and chokes and leg locks and guys being able to grab it. And then you didn't have the guys that weren't very good strikers that could throw big haymakers, hit a guy in the side of the head, get a knockout, and he could fight 2 months later, or even that night, right? They could go back and fight again. So the reality of it was really to bring it back to the purest form, and being able to, guys that are legitimately the tough guys, they're going to get rewarded for being good and doing what they do well. So when you talk about the transition of it, we have to get people used to bare knuckle again. And we've got to get people to understand, and not just people, fans, but I'm talking people as in the athletic commission, the people that regulate it, so that they feel more comfortable with what we're doing, knowing that it's not just all BS that these doctors and people are saying. It's the truth. Bare knuckle is a lot more safer than putting a 4-ounce glove on somebody, wrapping your hands, and then being able to hit them 100 times every round and not hurt your hand. I mean, to me, that's crazy if you think that's safer, because if you take the glove off and you hit a guy in the head, you're going to break your hand. So it really does take more of an accuracy, more legitimacy of a fighter, pure fighter, and putting them in the ring and being successful that way by being good at it, rather than just being somebody that's sloppy and you can throw big punches and not have to worry about where they land. So for me, I think it's full circle. Get them used to the bare knuckle, have them understand what it is and the danger that does not present itself with bare knuckle. And then we can move on from that. But first thing is let's get the bare knuckle out there, get it started, and let's see where it goes from there.
Awesome.
Ken, have you thought about fighting bare knuckle? I know that you are one of the pioneers of MMA. You have your own organization now. You're older, but not that old. I mean, look like you're in great shape. Have you thought about jumping in there and putting fisticuffs out there to get the name out there? You're a name. Wouldn't that make sense for you to be out there in fighting in the organization?
Yeah, you know, it's always in my mind. I'm a fighter. I'm a fighter at heart. It was hard for me to walk away, even though everybody was telling me to. So I do. I love it. I enjoy it. And I always want to do. I always want to fight. But again, like I said, I've got to be more realistic. You know, for me, it's more about setting the organization up. It's about being able to have opportunities for other people to be able to follow their dreams, to be able to live the dream I lived, and be able to get that excitement that I had when it came to bare knuckles. So that's where I get the thrill, is to see other fighters going there. I mean, when Mark Godbeer went out there and did his thing, along with LaVar Johnson and a few other guys there, but there's some pretty big names that were in our show. It was awesome to see the intensity on their face, the excitement after the win, because the stakes go up higher when it's bare knuckle. There's more to it. It's more, you get more feeling into it, and it feels more real. And the excitement, it seems like it's a little bit higher. So it was really awesome to see their faces and the excitement that they had after winning a fight. That's what I live for right now, is being able to see these guys go out there and see that look on their face when they win that fight. And, that's an exciting moment for me. So I look forward to seeing more of those. Right now, with all the stuff going on in the world, though, I guess we're going to have to wait.
Awesome. So there's no way that you're going to get back in there and do one more to get your – I mean, you know, like you could even do a senior match. Come on, there's some guys out there. What about you versus James Toney? That would be a great fight, you versus James Toney. Awesome. That would be an amazing fight. What do you think about that?
If James Toney
called you out, would you be like, let's go, son. Let's go, son.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Anybody calls me out, I'll say yes. I'm a fighter, like I said. If somebody came up and pointed a finger in my face and said, I want to fight you, I'm going to fight them. That's just me, man.
I want to see you versus James Toney. That fight would be epic.
Yeah, that would be fun too, because boxing, it's so much different than bare knuckle, even though it's almost the same kind of, everything's the same, but boy, I tell you, it's much different when you're used to wearing gloves and you try to punch somebody with a jab and they duck their head. And you land your punch, but it doesn't land in the nose. It lands in the forehead. Their hands are a little more fragile. So it'll be fun. It'll be something fun.
You know what's so funny, Chad?
It'd be great. No, we've seen. Go ahead.
Continue.
I was going to say, we've seen the MMA versus pro boxer already in bare knuckle boxing, and the MMA guy won. I would love to see Ken versus James Toney, because I think Ken would beat James Toney.
Yeah, I there's no question in my mind that I would definitely have a great time fighting him, and that I truly believe, because of my experience in bare knuckle, that I would have the upper hand on him, even though his footwork and his combinations, everything. But it's a lot different when you got a big glove trying to block somebody's punches, and I got pretty heavy hands.
That's the fight. That's the fight that people want to see, Ken. That's the fight people want to see, Ken. Ken Shamrock, James Toney.
Yeah, I won't say no. I won't say no.
All right, my man.
You know what's crazy, Ken? Like, my entire life, like, wherever you went, I followed you. Like, 1993, watching the first UFC, then WWE, I saw you there. Pride, saw you there. Like I said, you fought Alexander Otsuka, Pride Grand Prix 2000, and you won there, and then went back to the UFC. And, like, wherever you go, I just followed you. And, like, as soon as Mike Tyson came out of retirement, I'm like, Ken Shamrock is the guy that's going to take that Pepsi challenge. And I saw an article saying, Ken Shamrock says, yeah, I'll fight Mike Tyson. Why not? So, A, is there an opponent during the course of your career that you felt like you wanted to fight, or someone that you missed? Like, you fought the who's who. You've done it all. Is there, if you look back in your career, is there someone you wish that you fought?
Well, there is, but it's not really about, because I fought him. It was just that I fought him when I was in my 40s and my early 50s. And that was Tito Ortiz. I always felt like Tito was a tremendous champion. I thought at the time, pound for pound, he's probably the best fighter in the world. And here I was trying to fight him at 40 something years old. Late 40s and mid 40s, I fought him. And he was right in his prime. But I thought to myself, man, I would have loved to been able to get in a ring with him or in a cage with him and be able to have a fight when we were both in our primes, man. I think that would have been a tremendous opportunity for fans to see some great fights.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Gabe? Now, Ken, I don't know if you noticed, but Tito is looking for public office in Huntington Beach. Have you been following that at all?
No, I've heard pieces here and there, but you know, listen, man, I think that people kind of underestimate athletes and even fighters. And I think there's a lot of smart people that have gone through the UFC.
But not Tito.
No, I think Tito would be awesome. I think Tito, listen.
But not Tito, let's be honest. Come on.
No. I honestly think if you know Tito as a person, and like I said, I never really got to know him until after the fights and everything. And I really got to know him through another friend of mine, JT. And I tell you, man, the dude's really got a level head on him. I really do. And I think that he does. And if you get to know him, and I don't know him personally, but I know a lot of people around that were connected to my people that have spoke very highly of Tito and how sensitive he can be and how he can actually read people and be able to, and he's very kind to people, but also too, he has kind of that stern to him where right is right, you know, and that he's not going to bend for anybody. So I think anybody that lives in the United States of America and has a college education or a high school education has an opportunity to be able to further themselves in the world that we live in. And if he can get people to vote for him and he can be able to get into the office, I'll tell you this, I think he'd do a tremendous job.
And you know what I appreciate about McKenna, and you mentioned Tito Ortiz fight. But what I always appreciate about you is, even though you took that fight and you said that you took that fight in your 40s, I root for you in that fight. And I remember it was Vendetta. And it was November 2002. But what I appreciated about that, UFC was not doing well on pay-per-view whatsoever. They were getting their asses kicked on a routine basis as far as pay-per-view numbers. And they were losing money, bleeding money, you know, every single month. But for you to be selfless in taking that fight, and that was the first pay-per-view that really drew money and drew attention. You guys were on the best damn sports show, period. And, you know, you brought so much attention, notoriety back to the UFC. And that was the first pay-per-view that actually did numbers. Like, I thought that was the most selfless act ever for you to go to the UFC and you built up the sport in 93 and then go back to it. Obviously a little bit older and fighting a younger champion to bring that notoriety that you built up your entire career. Like it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And like, if it wasn't for guys like you, you know, this sport wouldn't be where it is today. And I don't think you know that too. Do you realize that? Like how much you've done for this sport?
Well, I do. And you kind of look back on it and it just bothers you that people like Dana and the people in the UFC and people who have benefited from the UFC and making all kinds of money haven't really given credit to where that credit is due. It's like they want to pat themselves on the back. They want to try to say that they did it, and that then and they even go as far as some of the media wanting to try to give praise where praise shouldn't have been. Because there's anger or frustration, or maybe there was an argument or a lawsuit or something that happened between myself and the UFC. But you can't erase history. You can't just because you don't like somebody after they helped you make all that money, turn around and sell the company for, $4 billion, and you can walk away into the sunset and then not turn around and give credit where credit's due, because you never would have made that money. If I hadn't have went back into the UFC in Vendetta with me and Tito Ortiz and built those numbers up where they needed to be so that they can get going in the right direction and raise awareness of what the UFC is and is going to do, they would be dead in the water. But unfortunately, that's where we're at right now. Do you realize I'm more popular now in the pro wrestling circuit than I am in the MMA world because I haven't been getting the credit that was due to me, because some people are angry at me because I stood my ground and I fought for what I thought was right.
Yeah, I love that. And I actually saw your comeback pro wrestling match in TNA. And I thought that was the greatest thing ever when you walked out. That nostalgia as being a little boy watching you on Monday Night Raw and countless pay-per-views. You know, it just brought that nostalgia back. And it was so awesome to see you walk out. But, you know, as a guy that's built two sports, what would you do differently, you know, UFC under the confines of a publicly traded company, and actually MMA itself under the confines of a publicly traded company, and the WWE, again, another publicly traded company. Like, what do you do differently about pro wrestling?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last part.
If you were running the show as a guy who's built two sports, how would you run WWE differently, and how would you run UFC differently?
Oh, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, if it was me ahead of with the WWE, I would bring back what made them popular in the first place, and that's kind of the attitude era. It's like they're kind of got away from the tough guys, the roughness of it, and we get more back to the light touch and gimmick stuff. So I would probably make sure that I reached in and tried to create more characters that were more what people can relate to as far as being just tough people, tough guys, and try to have matches that people can relate to. Like they're starting to do it now with the underground, with the controlled stuff, with the work shoots sort of call, but it's not where it needs to be, right? Like there should have been prepared for it and had people in place to where if they were going to do something like that, that it would have been at least the first show, and the second show was better, but not where it needed to be. But at least had people that were used to doing those kinds of matches, because it just does, it puts a real bad taste in people's mouths when they watch something and it flops because someone didn't really understand what they were doing, as opposed to going in and putting something and knocking it out of the park, because there's plenty of people out there that know how to do that. And there's still people that can still get in the ring and do that and then not use them. That was one of the things that blew me away more than anything, was the availability of people being able to do those work shoots is out there, but yet you didn't use any of them. And that just blew me away. I just didn't understand that. And obviously with the UFC, I think that they're having so many fights. It seems like it's they've got this day and this day and this day and constantly doing these fights. and it's taken away the excitement of watching fights. Personally, me, I would not, and I think this is what's happened to boxing, and it's kind of fizzled out, was they saturated the market for a while, boxing on every channel. You know, back in the 80s, right? And in the 90s, it was just, it was flaming. But there was on every channel, and you had like 100 different world boxing champions in different divisions and in different organizations. And pretty soon you go, what belt is that? And so it just got confusing. And I think it just seems like there's pushing so many fights because they're trying to control the market and not let any competitors get in there. So they're saturating it themselves. But what it's doing is it's taking away the excitement of actually watching a fight on a Saturday on a pay-per-view event, which they don't do pay-per-views anymore, and actually watch it and be able to say, hey, these are the big fights coming up, as opposed to seeing three or four of them during the week and then doing one that everybody's going to watch. It just seems like it's so much.
Great. And we got time for one more question. So, Gabe, fire away.
Tito Ortiz versus Ken Shamrock, bare knuckle. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no question me. There's no doubt in my mind. Even Chuck Liddell. I think Chuck Liddell or Tito in a bare knuckle fight, man, no question. It's me.
I agree. Perfect. And Ken, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Again, you're one of my childhood heroes. I grew up watching you since 93. And everywhere, again, MMA, pro wrestling considered, I saw you and I always admired you and always idolized you. You are the man. But any last words, anything you can plug, any place we can find you, fire away.
No, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for following. I appreciate it. It's been a great journey. Valor Bare Knuckle, we're going to be looking at doing it again in 2021. And we're going to bring a lot more of entertainment that way. So appreciate you. Thank you and God bless.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Take care, Ken.
Gabe, I'm in a nerd rage. Oh my god, I got to talk to one of my idols, just like you. When I thought you were a host, Gabe, I'm like, holy shit, got so nervous. Ken Shamrock on the show, same fucking nerves. Holy shit.
Wow. I don't care.
Of course you don't, because you were literally in this at the beginning.
Life is complete.
You don't care, but I'm a fanboy. Gabe, don't kill my dreams.
I don't care. But I do care about either James Toney or Tito Ortiz taking the fight against Ken Shamrock and going bare knuckle and making that stuff happen and fighting Mixer. You hear it here first.
Gabe, would you ever do bare knuckle? You know you would. You know you would fucking do bare knuckle. Don't even lie, sir.
No, we've talked about this before. I would do it, but I want to get paid. Listen, I have a family, and these hands are to pick up my child who's 11 months old. I don't want to break them, but I will break them for the right amount of money. I can hold it with my elbows.
So, right. Dave, would you fight Tito Ortiz in a bare knuckle fight?
Yes, please, and thank you.
Let's do this.
Let's fucking do it. Matt, can we arrange this?
I don't know. I got to look into that. I can talk to Nate.
You know what? No. I want to do a 3-round fight with Tito. First round is a spelling bee. Oh. Second round is boxing. Third round is a battle of wits.
Fucking crying. Holy shit.
You heard it here, folks.
Three rounds. First round is a spelling bee. Second round is boxing. Third round is a battle of wits. I got 2 out of 3 guaranteed.
You know what? Like, he is really on Tito Ortiz. He's really on Donald Trump's nuts so hard right now. Like, oh my god, holy shit! Like, you know what? Nothing against Tito. You know, again, Tito is one of the marquee guys. And again, you know, it wasn't my taste, but God love him. But he's really on Donald Trump's nuts. Like, he's got to like loosen that grip a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, dumb people like dumb people. That's how it works.
Unfucking believable. Do you think he fights again, though? I don't think he fights again.
Tito or Donald Trump?
Tito.
I thought he was going to do the bare knuckle versus Chuck. Or was that not
fake.
True?
Yeah, that was fake.
Yeah, when I noticed.
He fell for it.
Dave fell.
I don't care enough. Tito Ortiz versus Ken Shamrock. You heard it first. Fight mixer.
Let's do it.
I just didn't know.
I'd love to see all those guys back in the
ring. I would watch that fight.
I would pay any amount of money. I'd pay any amount of money for Chuck Liddell to never step in the ring again. Seeing Chuck Liddell get knocked out by Tito Ortiz was fucking heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Disheartening.
Someone sent me some videos of Instagram of him hitting ads, and I was like, oh God, please let this be a strategic move to make Tito think that he's really bad. But it turns out that wasn't the case at all.
Do you think it was ring rust? Or because I know the first thing to go is somebody's chin. Like, that's the first thing to go. And do you think it was just ring rust? Do you think it was just his chin went? Like, what was it, a combination of all those things? Like,
I will say this. Chuck, in his prime, was a gangster. And I think the things that he brought to the table that other people did not is he had an iron chin and he had iron hands. And the chin allowed him to get those iron hands off. When the chin was gone, that was pretty much it. And I take nothing away from Chuck because he's a gangster. Dude, I really one of those guys that you have to, like, as far as like a true star of the sport, I respect him immensely, but he should never have ever taken that fight. And it was a travesty of MMA justice for anyone to allow him to fight.
I will never fucking, to the day I die, I'll never forgive Oscar De La Hoya for getting that fight even sanctioned or even entertaining that fucking idea. Because, like, he has two wins over Tito, you know, two wins in both of their primes. And he completely fucking killed it with that Tito Ortiz fight. Like, and Oscar De La Hoya,
you know what?
He doesn't even appreciate. Yes, sir?
Listen, you can say Oscar all you want. You can say Oscar all you want. The fact that the California State Athletic Commission said okay to that is criminal. It's freaking criminal.
Fucking unbelievable.
Genuinely. You cannot allow those fights to happen.
And Oscar didn't care. He didn't give a shit. He couldn't even pronounce Chuckadell's name right. Like, he just wanted the fucking money. He's a piece of shit. Fuck Oscar. Yeah, he's... I'm sorry. I'm ranting. Sorry, guys.
Money.
Sorry,
dude. I think it did 400 pay-per-views. What do you mean, yeah, money? There was no money that made from that. There was. They were giving tickets out. As a matter, listen. I went to go get lunch at Chipotle, and there was people that were going to give me tickets to the fight to every person that walked in. Like, no, they made no money on that fight. It was a sad experience, and I still want to see Ken versus Tito, bare knuckle. I'm excited about that one.
It'll be a good one.
I'm on it.
Let's fucking do it. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children,
get on that, Matt.
Ladies and gentlemen, okay, so we're about to wrap up the show with, of course, Gabe, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, former WC champion, UFC veteran, fucking GOAT, the man himself. Gabe, any last words from you, good sir?
No, I just thanks everyone for tuning in. And it was great listening to talking to Colin and talking to Ken. And I'm going to say that if the Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz, or Ken Shamrock versus James Sony fight actually happens, it's because of me. You're welcome. You're welcome, people.
All right, Matt, the producer, do we have any great guests coming up? Plug our upcoming shows, especially on Wednesday night with those great gals and a upcoming guest. What do you got for us, Matt?
We got BKFC CEO coming on next week, and Several other people. I can't remember who all is coming on. You probably know more than I do.
Shoni Carter, Mr. International.
How could I forget that?
I am so excited about that. Aren't you, Gabe?
Yeah.
I will tell you, Shoni is a character, and I really like Shoni. I like Shoni a lot.
I want to party with Shoni.
I want to party with Shoni. When I texted Shoni, I'm like, Shoni, you down? And he calls me right away. He's like, I'll do that texting shit. But yeah, I'm down with that show. And I'm like, fucking Shoni, the GOAT, the fucking man right there.
But I also do want to remind people.
Shoni is always down to party.
Go ahead.
Shoni is always down to party. I was going to say, Shoni is always down to party. But I'll tell you, you know Jeff Blatnick is.
Yeah.
One day I got to tell you about partying with Andy Anderson. And Jeff Blatnick, when I first met Jeff, he said, if you ever get an opportunity to train with, or I'm sorry, to party with Andy Anderson, do that shit. And I did.
We need like an Ask Gabe show. I have been asking Matt since the very beginning. Can we do an Ask Gabe show, please?
We always have a little time after.
No one cares about that.
We can spread
it. I care about that. I don't give a shit about anybody else.
Fuck that.
I want an Ask Gabe show. This is for my own selfish benefit.
But do
talk any time, Dave. You're just gonna give me a call.
All right, fair enough, sir. Fair enough. So from all of us,
download the app.
Download the app. Right down there.
Apple TV, Amazon TV, or Roku. Amazon, you can download Roku. Go ahead.
No, I was mimicking you. Go. You're right.
I thought you were, but
all right, boys and girls. I was lagging out too. So, boys and girls, children of all ages, from the Fight Mixer show, from Mr. Gabe, Matt, the producer, and myself, we are signing off for the Fight Mixer. We'll see you next Thursday, y'all. Peace!
Perfect.
Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.
The lights are